Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, the network for social justice. At a packed meeting this past week, the Valle de Oro Planning Commission members cast their votes against the controversial Cottonwood sand mine proposed along the Sweetwater River. Find out details and when the county's planning commission will hear this major project on our show today. The Sierra Club has filed a lawsuit challenging DOJ's mass firings, including rangers and other workers in our national parks. While local Republican Congressman Daryl Issa continues ducking constituents' calls to hold a town hall, Democratic Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs held a virtual town hall over the weekend to hear her constituents' concerns and update them on efforts to rein in the Trump administration's actions. El Cajon Police have provided us with an update on how passage of Proposition 36 is impacting their arrest rates in the city. The Trump administration is slashing aid to food banks and other organizations that feed hungry Americans in need, and now they're taking aim at SNAP, the program formerly known as food stamps. El Cajon has announced a new ride-sharing program for its city residents and visitors, and we'll have details. The wife of a CAL FIRE captain stabbed to death in Ramona has been arrested in Mexico, and she is charged with murder. With spring break coming up, San Diego County's Public Health Department has issued a health alert in hopes of preventing students from bringing home measles after outbreaks have sickened 400 people in 19 states, resulting in 2 deaths. Then on Destination East County, hear about some amazing April festivals and events coming up across our inland region, including several flower festivals, an aerobatics competition, Lakeside's Rodeo and Western Days Parade, egg hunts, a bunny train ride, a mystery dinner show, a taste of Lakeside, a wine tasting festival in Ramona, the opening of an outdoor roller rink skating redo, the opening of an outdoor roller skating rink in Alpine, and a Roaring Twenties party atop Mount Helix for the Mount Helix Park's centennial celebration. Santee's City Council has a new list of priorities with fire safety as number one, and we'll have the tales. On People Power, hear about an event coming up to commemorate the Lemon Grove incident, the landmark school desegregation case involving Mexican-American students right here in East County. California Attorney General Rob Bonta is warning users of the 23andMe genetic testing site that the company is in financial trouble, and he's recommending that consumers delete their data. We'll tell you how on our show today. We'll also have tips on how to fire harden your home from California News Service in the wake of those destructive LA fires. Plus, we'll share news about Urban Timber, an upcycling lumber company that's relocated to Campo. And finally, hear how cuts being made at the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency could impact your health and safety. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
More than 100 residents who would be impacted by the proposed Cottonwood sand mine gathered in force on March 18th at the Rancho San Diego Library to let the Valle de Oro Community Planning Group know that they don't want it in their neighborhood. After listening to more than 24 people share their concerns, the Community Planning Group voted unanimously 11-0 to recommend that the county oppose the project that would convert 214 acres of the former Cottonwood Golf Course in Rancho San Diego into a digging site for sand mining for at least 10 years. Chairman Odai Youssef said he would be submitting a formal recommendation opposing the project to the San Diego County Planning Department, which would be hearing the sand mine proposal at its April 18th meeting. Residents at the meeting in Rancho San Diego expressed concerns ranging from environmental, health, and safety issues related to silica dust kicked up during the process, as well as traffic impacts. Among there to listen were applicant representative Bryce Bostler and the county land use planner Chris Jacobs. San Miguel Consolidated Fire Protection District Director Teresa McKenna said that in 2022, then Fire Chief Chris Brainerd provided comments to the county on the district's concerns about construction trucks potentially delaying emergency responses if the project is built. Others say that the project is inconsistent with both the county general plan and the community-specific plan. The Rancho-specific plan identifies the golf course serving as a buffer area and providing a larger setback to sensitive habitat areas, including a federal wildlife preserve just downstream from the site. Critics also voice concerns that a final environmental impact report has not been made public, so they are working off information culled from the draft EIR, first circulated in 2021. The site is in the middle of the Rancho San Diego region, shares borders with homes, and is near schools and businesses. Dr. Bob Foster, a retired physician, said he is extremely concerned about the negative health effects of this sand mine idea, adding, "It's a danger to those kids who have to walk to school every day across the clouds of smoke and sand that are going to be expelled from the sand mine operation. It's just appalling to me that this plan has actually gotten to this level." The site runs along the Sweetwater River watershed, a nearly 230-square-mile region that goes from the Cuyamaca Mountains out to the San Diego Bay. Groundwater from its lower basin is also linked to the watershed. Sweetwater Authority, which oversees the water in the region, has expressed concern in the past about the project's impact on water levels and quality. Joseph Feathers, a registered civil engineer and member of the Valle de Oro Cottonwood Subcommittee, posed some rhetorical questions to those in attendance. "Would you trust an applicant or engineers who missed the need for an additional 3.5 million tons of backfill? Would you trust the same applicant to excavate 79 acres downstream of the 30-year-old Steel Canyon Bridge and about 100 acres upstream up to 40 feet below the ground surface?" Feathers said that the development proposes to backfill the river with excavated materials they can't sell. "This project can potentially taint and pollute the drinking water that flows into the Sweetwater Reservoir, which serves almost 200,000 South Bay residents, potentially endangering and impacting them as well as the wildlife in the area," she said. The developer of the land at the golf course, New West Investment, has said previously that the project is needed to supply sand for local building and infrastructure projects, and its presence will mean avoiding the cost of importing sand. Areas included within the project boundary that are not disturbed by mining would be subject to habitat improvement through removal of invasive species in the river channel, if necessary, or would be left in their current condition, including the existing Sweetwater River channel. The project would also make certain improvements to Willow Glen Drive before beginning mining operations. New West Investment and Los Angeles-based investor Michael Schlesinger purchased Cottonwood in 2015, 4 years after the golf course filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Representatives for the project responded to an interview request with this brief statement: "The Cottonwood proposal would ultimately transform a defunct golf course property into 200 acres of permanent, preserved, open space for the community to enjoy. In the near term, it would provide critically needed sand supplies for housing and infrastructure projects through a phased approach that reduces community concerns around views." The statement continues, adding, "Creating a local sand supply at Cottonwood is a win for San Diego region because it would reduce the increased costs and environmental damage caused by trucking sand in from outside the region and Mexico." Schlesinger has been planning to mine the site of the former Cottonwood golf course since 2018. He bought the property in 2015. He had also purchased the Escondido Country Club in 2012, then shut down the golf course and worked to build nearly 400 homes on the site. After legal battles, these homes were eventually built and are now known as the Master Planned Canopy Grove. While the new environmental impact review has not been released as originally filed, the proposal explains the plan to mine 4.7 million cubic yards of sand over 10 years. The extraction process would occur in three phases over the span of 10 years, and the cleanup, equipment removal, and final reclamation would occur in the fourth phase over 2 years. Sand excavation and processing would occur between 7 a.m. and 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, with trucking operations for material sales and backfill import from 9 a.m. until 3:30 p.m. Monday through Friday. Elizabeth Urquhart, who has spearheaded the Stop Cottonwood Sand Mine efforts, spoke passionately at the meeting and presented evidence, she said, shows the continued sand mine major use permit application is unsuitable for approval based on many factors, including impacts on the surrounding environment, neighborhood character, and public facilities. The StopCottonwoodSandMine.com site has been active since the beginning of the issue, and through its work, a large number of Rancho San Diego's nearly 21,000 residents have signed petitions and have packed public meetings through the years to oppose the project. After the meeting, Rancho San Diego resident Anne Marie Jacques said the community doesn't need a sand mine because it wouldn't add anything of substance or value to us. As for the developer, she concluded, they're only looking out for their own bank accounts, not the people who live, work, and go to school in the area. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
The Sierra Club predicts big problems at national parks such as Yosemite and Sequoia this summer because the Trump administration is slashing federal funding and firing employees. So the club has just sued the Department of Government Efficiency. On Thursday, judges in two similar suits ordered the feds to reinstate the workers. But Gloria Smith, who is managing attorney for the Sierra Club's environmental law program, says the nonprofit's suit is unaffected.
So we are very pleased that the courts are holding, and we fully support this judge's well-reasoned decision holding DOGE accountable, but it remains to be seen whether or not the Trump administration will follow court orders.
One of the other lawsuits challenging the layoffs was brought by employee unions, the other by 20 Democratic attorneys general. The temporary restraining orders require the Trump administration to reinstate tens of thousands of probationary workers, many of whom were fired, citing allegedly poor performance, without evidence. The Trump administration insists the reduction in force is necessary to cut costs and has already filed appeals in those two cases. Smith says if the employees don't go back to work soon, national parks could be plagued by long entrance lines, trash, dirty bathrooms, or worse.
The trails are likely to not be maintained. There's a good chance that campgrounds will not be cleaned up and cared for. There's a lot of work that goes into making a park presentable and safe for the high season when millions and millions of people visit.
The administration has authorized the Park Service to hire 7,700 seasonal workers for the summer. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
While San Diego's Republican Congressman Daryl Issa has ducked out on holding town halls for the past 7 years, leading constituents to host an empty town hall meeting in Escondido last weekend, Democratic Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs hosted a virtual town hall on Saturday, and she has pledged to hold an in-person town hall coming up on April 22nd in El Cajon. At her virtual town hall, Jacobs answered questions submitted in advance, drawing 1,200 viewers. She acknowledged that the outlook is bleak in some ways for those opposed to President Donald Trump's policies and proposals, but she does see progress in recent decisions in which judges ruled against Trump, including a temporary restraining order to block the administration from deporting hundreds of Venezuelans under the Alien Enemies Act. Jacobs said, "Now we're pushing Republicans to stand up and respect the courts because they've privately told me that their red line is Trump not abiding by a court order." Other rulings have barred the Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, from accessing Social Security records and blocking Trump's ban on transgender service members. Jacobs represents California's 51st Congressional District, which includes Central as well as parts of East County. She has been in town this past week, taking multiple meetings with residents and stakeholders, including at Rady Children's Hospital, where she discussed potential cuts to Medicaid funding. She began her town hall Saturday by outlining her frustration with the federal spending bill that was approved by Congress last week. Jacobs said she voted against this bill because, quote, "I am very concerned about some of what was in there, including cuts to veterans care, cuts to rent subsidies, cuts to Army Corps of Engineer construction projects, and more." While California's two senators voted against the budget bill, Jacobs voiced disappointment in other Senate Democrats who aided Republicans in passing the bill to avoid a government shutdown. Times of San Diego reports that before answering questions, Jacobs shared her opposition to the president's use of the Alien Enemies Act. She is a co-sponsor of a bill to repeal that 1798 law. The Congresswoman also said she joined a recent bipartisan oversight delegation on a trip to Guantanamo Bay to see the conditions in which migrants being deported were held. She said, "After our oversight visits, they actually moved all the immigrants who were there back to the continental United States, I think because even the Republicans realized there was no reason for the cost and the cruelty." Questions for Jacobs range from DOGE and challenges to its leader, billionaire Elon Musk, to complaints about Democratic Senator Chuck Schumer, a subject of criticism for his role in passage of that spending bill. Some constituents who took part in the town hall feared for democracy itself. Jacobs tried to reassure them. She said, "What we've seen from other countries is that if we can put together a broad-based pro-democracy movement, we actually have a pretty good chance of getting a better democracy on the other side." She also told constituents they could support congressional efforts to halt Musk's actions by filing a Freedom of Information Act request for a report on the information that DOGE has accessed about them personally. "Doing so," Jacobs said, "is one way that you can really help us to do our constitutional oversight job." She urged constituents to send them the information they find, which she said is really helpful to Congress in being able to understand exactly what DOGE has accessed. She added that her office will post information on her website about how to file Freedom of Information Act or FOIA requests. Again, Jacobs plans another town hall, this one in person on April 22nd in El Cajon. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Last November, Californians passed Proposition 36, the Homelessness, Drug Addiction, and Theft Reduction Act. This measure now allows police to arrest and book offenders for certain crimes that were previously unenforceable. For example, until the passage of Prop 36, individuals with prior convictions for hard drugs and theft were only cited and released instead of being booked into custody. Supporters argued that the measure was needed to hold repeat offenders accountable and crack down on crimes such as smash-and-grab retail thefts and fentanyl trafficking. Opponents called the measure a waste of taxpayer dollars to imprison people who may not be a danger to society. According to El Cajon Police Department's Lieutenant Nick Spreco, since Prop 36 went into effect, El Cajon police officers have arrested and booked into custody 59 offenders for drug-related offenses and made 11 arrests for theft. Police Chief Jeremiah Larson says, "Prop 36 is crucial in the fight against crime. Putting chronic offenders in jail, keeping our community safe is a priority for our department, and Prop 36 aids in that process." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Giovanni McNeely.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
The Trump administration is slashing programs that help provide food to hungry Americans. The U.S. Department of Agriculture has cut two programs that provided over $1 billion to schools and food banks to purchase fresh foods from local farmers and ranchers. About $660 million of those funds were in the Local Food for Schools Cooperative Agreement Program, which provided funds to schools and child care facilities. The rest were part of the Local Food Purchase Assistance Cooperative Agreement Program, which provided funds to local food banks, tribes, and other organizations. State officials were notified on March 7th of the USDA's decision to end those programs this year. These cuts come as Donald Trump's second presidential administration has also cut federal spending and imposed tariffs, which forced food organizations and farmers to cut staff and halt investments. Food banks have been seeing demands increase due to rising food prices, and yet Republicans in Congress are also pushing to make significant cuts to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, the program formerly known as food stamps. Shannon Gleave, the president of the SNAP program, issued a press release stating these proposals would cause millions of children to lose access to free school meals at a time when working families are struggling with rising food costs. Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey criticized the Trump administration for cutting programs that would have provided $12 million in food-related funding for schools and food banks in her state. She said, Donald Trump and Elon Musk have declared that feeding children and supporting local farmers are no longer priorities. She adds that withholding essential funding violates court orders. Cole Williamson is the vice president of administration at the San Diego Food Bank. He says the food bank here doesn't yet precisely know how changes to U.S. aid or other federal programs will impact them. We are working with state and federal officials to figure that out, he says, adding, we will continue to monitor the developing situation and adjust as needed. On March 19th, Politico reports that the USDA halted millions of dollars worth of deliveries to food banks without explanation, according to food bank leaders in six states. The USDA previously allocated $500,000 in deliveries to food banks for fiscal year 2025 through the Emergency Food Assistance Program, and now the food bank leaders say many of those orders have been canceled. For the Central California Food Bank, that means a loss of $500,000 of expected food deliveries worth $850,000 just for April through July, according to co-CEO Natalie Caples. Caples says she has not received any assurances from USDA on whether these delivery cancellations are temporary. The Emergency Food Assistance Network gets its funding from a mix of money from the Farm Bill and through commodities USDA purchases, but the patchwork funding system has left the program unable to meet increasing hunger needs, anti-hunger advocates say. These clawbacks come as Congress is weighing shrinking the SNAP program, which helps 40 million low-income Americans afford food. That could further exacerbate the pressure on food banks, which provide just one meal for every nine that SNAP supplies. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is John Tidwell with a public service announcement from the City of El Cajon. The City of El Cajon has launched Via San Diego El Cajon, a new app-based on-demand transit program designed to expand transportation access for residents and visitors. Service went live on March 17th, and all rides are free for the first month. Via San Diego allows anyone within the El Cajon service zone to book a shared ride in the app, which is available in the App Store and Google Play, or by calling 619-413-9986. With the program, residents can affordably and conveniently reach local destinations such as work, shopping, education, appointments, regional transit hubs, and more without needing a private car. Here's how it works. Once someone books a ride, Via's technology matches them with other riders headed in the same direction in one small electric vehicle, creating quick and efficient shared trips. Riders are directed to virtual bus stops, typically a short walk away from their pickup and drop-off location, which minimizes detours and keeps trips running smoothly for everyone. The program will operate Monday to Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. The free ride period ends April 17th, after which trips will cost $2.50 each. Riders with mobility issues can request door-to-door services and wheelchair-accessible vehicles. Brian Nelson at Via San Diego says the program is thrilled to partner with El Cajon to launch this zero-emission, tech-enabled microtransit program as part of the broader Via San Diego platform. El Cajon's decision follows a similar initiative by City Heights and North Park Main Street, which launched the Mid-City Go program using the same Via San Diego app in January. Via San Diego El Cajon is funded by a $1.5 million award from the Clean Mobility Options Voucher Pilot Program, with additional support from the California Energy Commission's Clean Transportation Program. For more information on Via San Diego options locally, you can visit city.ridewithvia.com and type in your address.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Crime Beat report. The woman accused of killing her wife, a CAL FIRE captain in Ramona, has been arrested in Mexico more than a month after the slaying, according to the San Diego County Sheriff. Authorities had been searching since late February 17th for Yolanda Marodi, the suspect of the stabbing death of Captain Rebecca Marodi. Mexican authorities notified U.S. Marshals after finding the suspect at a Mexicali hotel and taking her into custody. Captain Marodi was found dead by her mother at the couple's home on Rancho Villa Road in Ramona, suffering from multiple stab wounds, according to court documents. Security footage showed the victim fleeing the couple's home with Yolanda Marodi close behind, holding a knife with blood on her arms. The suspect previously served time in prison for voluntary manslaughter after killing her former spouse with a knife. She is now charged with murder. This is Miriam Raftery with a health alert. The number of measles cases in the United States continues to grow this year. While a large outbreak is centered in Texas and New Mexico, there are over 400 confirmed cases across 19 states now, and at least 2 confirmed deaths. Measles is one of the most contagious viruses in existence. It's a respiratory infection that spreads through droplets in the air whenever a person breathes, coughs, or sneezes if they're infected. The virus can linger in the air and on surfaces for hours. Now, so far, no cases have been reported in San Diego County in 2025, but with many people taking advantage of spring break, the potential for new infections could rise, and travelers should be aware. The county is urging folks to leave measles out of your spring break plans. Dr. Seema Shah, Medical Director of County Epidemiology and Immunization Services, says if you have traveled internationally or nationally near an outbreak area and you're experiencing symptoms of measles, call your health care provider immediately. Measles is not just a fever and rash, she warns. It can be a very dangerous illness, especially for young children and babies. Infants under 1 year of age are most at risk because they have not had their measles vaccine yet. Children over 1 year who are not immunized and people with compromised or weakened immune systems are also at high risk. Even when it's not deadly, measles can lead to severe health complications. About 1 case in every 1,000 unvaccinated children is fatal. The symptoms of measles include fever, cough, runny nose, red eyes, and fatigue. A red rash usually appears 1 to 4 days after symptoms begin, starting at the head and then spreading to the lower body. There is no cure or treatment. Dr. Shaw says the best way to prevent measles and protect your child from getting sick is with a vaccine. Getting the measles vaccine is much safer than getting the measles. Adults vaccinated between 1963 and 1967 should check with their doctor to see if they have the most current formula. Some adults may need a booster. For more information about measles, other vaccine-preventable diseases, and the shots that protect against them, you can visit the county's immunization branch online, or you can call them at 866-358-2966.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now, stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week. This is Miriam Raftery with this week's destination, East County. It's springtime here in East County and the season for flower festivals, including Daffodil Days and a Lilac Festival, both in Julian, plus Sweet Pea Days in Flint Springs. There are also Easter egg hunts and bunny rides aboard a historic train in Campo. Plus, you can watch aerobatics daredevils take wing in a competition in Borrego Springs. Head to Lakeside's Rodeo and Western Days Parade, or roller skate outdoors at the Viejas Outlet Center in Alpine. This April, you can also enjoy a Roaring Twenties Centennial Party atop Mount Helix, a Taste of Lakeside event, a mystery dinner theater in El Cajon, a Taste of Lakeside, plus a wine tasting festival in Ramona. And here are the details. Southern California's largest outdoor roller rink will open for spring and summer season at Viejas Outlet Mall on April 4th. Skate rentals are available. After skating, visitors can also enjoy shop or dining at the Outlet Center's many stores and eateries. You can learn more at viejasoutletcenter.com. The Pacific Southwest Railway Museum in Campo invites you to come aboard the Bunny Train departing Saturdays and Sundays from April 5th through 20th. Trains depart at 10:30, 1 p.m., and 2:30 p.m. After your ride through our beautiful backcountry, a treasure trove of hidden eggs awaits youngsters at the museum's exhibit building. Children can trade eggs for prizes and meet the Easter Bunny, who will be chilling out in his charming garden, ready for cuddles and photo opportunities. For more information and reservations, you can visit the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum site at psrm.org. Parkway Plaza Regional Shopping Mall invites you and the family to hop on over for an Easter egg extravaganza on April 5th from 1 to 3 p.m. Activities include balloon art, crafts, a scavenger hunt, prizes, and a box lunch, plus photos with the Easter Bunny and 3D printed eggs while supplies last. The first 100 registrants will also receive bunny ears and a goodie bag. You can find event details and register at visitparkwayplaza.com. The Circle Players will be performing the dinner theater production of Everyone's a Critic on April 5th at 6:30 and on April 6th at 1:30 p.m. Performance will be held in Richardson Hall in El Cajon. All seats for this mystery dinner theater show are $30 and include a three-course French-themed meal. The show is directed by Joel Gossett. On the brink of a famous food critic's first bite, the staff of an exclusive French restaurant has a traitor in the kitchen who appears to be bent on sabotaging the evening. You, the audience, while enjoying a delicious French three-course meal, must guess who the culprit is. Reservations can be made by visiting the website at thecircleplayers.org and click on tickets. The Main Avenue Revitalization Association invites you to the Taste of Lakeside, its upcoming fundraiser April 8th from 5 to 8 p.m. This event brings together 10 local restaurants, including Cali Stack, Ranch House, Octavio's, Eastbound, Yogurt Barn, The Parks, Caffeine Queens, and the VFW, offering attendees the opportunity to sample culinary delights. Tickets may be purchased from Mary's Donuts or from the Lakeside Historical Society on Saturdays or from any Main Avenue Revitalization Association member. All funds raised will be directly supporting downtown historic Lakeside. You're invited to join the 100th anniversary celebration of Mount Helix Park with a Roaring Twenties-themed party on April 12th from 4:30 to 8 p.m. in the Mount Helix Nature Theater. Enjoy delicious appetizers and dinner from Becker's Catering, followed by dueling pianos and dancing under the stars. Beer, wine, and soft drinks are also included. All tickets include shuttle service to and from the parking lot, entertainment, appetizers, dinner, dessert, beer, wine, and soft drinks. For tickets, visit mounthelixpark.org/100. That's Mount Helix, MTHELIX, park.org. The Ramona Valley Vintners Association and the Ramona Chamber of Commerce invite you to Cheers to the Valley Wine Festival on Saturday, April 5th from 12 to 4 p.m. at Beegent Ranch in Ramona. The event includes catered small bites, arts and craft vendors, live music by local artists, unlimited tastings from local wineries, and a complimentary tasting glass. For tickets and a list of participating wineries and vendors, you can visit ramonachamber.com. An international aerobatics competition will be held at the Borrego Springs Airport Thursday through Saturday, April 10th through 12th, organized by the International Aerobatic Club's Chapter 36, or IAC 36. A highlight for viewers is Saturday's 4-minute freestyle flight set to music, usually involving smoke, flown by top pilots. Thursday is practice and registration, while Friday features contest flights all day long. You can also stop by the Propeller Bar and Grill, where you can enjoy food and drinks, plus a rooftop deck to view the flying. The IAC Chapter 36 is based in Borrego Springs and promotes precision aerobatics through coaching, competition, and camaraderie. The Borrego Airport boasts the world's finest permanent surface wavered aerobatics box. For a full schedule of events, Visit iac36.org. Julian Farm and Orchard invites you to Daffodil Days, which continue each Friday, Saturday, and Sunday now through April 13th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. In addition to you-pick daffodils, visitors can also enjoy other activities for a fee, including a petting zoo, rock climbing, swings, picnic area, a tractor-pulled hayride, and more. Find details at julianfarmandorchard.com. The City of Santee invites you to hop on over to Santee's Bunny Trail on Saturday, April 12th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Santee Trolley Square. Guests can enjoy photos with the bunny, games, crafts, face painting, giveaways, and carnival rides. Fort Cross Adventures in Julian hosts its Spring Lilac Festival from April 19th through May 11th on Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Sundays from noon to 5 p.m. General admission includes entry into a lilac maze, family farm area, and more. A festival activity package adds a wagon ride, treasure hunt, interactive reptile show, visits with farm animals, a hoedown and jug band show, paint and craft, and lilac-themed candle dipping. Additional activities are available for a fee. Pre-registration for the Lilac Festival is advised, and you can get reservations at fortcross.com/lilac-festival. Visitors can also purchase fresh lilac bouquets at the farm stand 7 days a week from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Summers Past Farms in Flynn Springs invites you to Sweet Pea Day. Saturday, April 19th, you can stroll through a towering, fragrant maze of these old-fashioned, dainty flowers, take photos, cut, and make your own bouquet from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. as long as the blooms last. Summers Past Farms is located in Flint Springs between Elk Cajon and Alpine. You can get more information at summerspastfarms.com. The 61st Annual Lakeside Rodeo takes place April 24th through 27th at the Lakeside Rodeo Grounds. Events range from barrel racing to bull riding. All proceeds from the Lakeside Rodeo benefit youth and youth groups in Lakeside, such as scholarships for high school seniors, special needs summer camps, the 4-H Club, Future Farmers of America, book giveaways to students, scouting, journalism classes, auto mechanics instruction, youth sports, and the arts. For tickets and more details, you can visit lakesiderodeo.com. And finally, the 60th Annual Western Days Parade in Lakeside steps off starting at 9:35 a.m. on Saturday, April 26th. This year's parade along Main Avenue in downtown Lakeside honors hometown heroes. The parade is organized by the Lakeside Chamber of Commerce. More information is available at lakesidechamber.org. You can find more information on these and more events in our Festivals and Events section at eastcountymagazine.org and on our calendar. That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
Santee knows it has to be better when it comes to providing fire protection to its residents. So after a sales tax-funded plan for new fire stations failed in November, the City Council has made improving the essential service as its top priority. The council was already focused on getting a couple of new stations to double the current number, two, to serve a population of more than 60,000. It was building a temporary station off Olive Way, where it formerly used to keep its maintenance operations, and was planning a new station in the north part of the city. But the council was hoping the half-cent hike to local sales taxes would finance the improvements. Not so fast, said voters who rejected the plan. At its March 12th meeting, the Santee City Council set building new fire stations, along with finding new ways to pay for them, as its number one goal from a list of 10 priorities. City Manager Marlene Best listed what the city is already doing, including adding new trucks, more emergency medical personnel, completing the temporary station, designing a permanent station at the operations yard, and conducting a study for a third station in the north part of the city. Then she said, "We're also looking at the potential for a new funding measure that could mean another sales tax hike or raising taxes on property owners." The rest of the list mirrored what the priorities were 2 years ago, with Best giving updates whether the goals were accomplished and their status. The number two priority, annexing West Hills Parkway and surrounding parcels, is still up in the air. Best said, the council wants to work with one property owner to ensure his project conforms to Santee's higher standards. The fact is, that this property, indeed all of West Hills Parkway, remains in the city of San Diego, so whatever Santee wants could be ignored, as was the case when San Diego approved the Castle Rock development, now called Weston. Priority number three is to maintain focus on road paving, especially on West Hills Parkway. Fourth, expand economic opportunities through a recently adopted arts and entertainment district. The city has a vision of turning the town center and its surrounding area into a village that would feature art galleries, dance studios, theaters, restaurants, and bars. The city also will be deciding on who will run a total of four cannabis shops in the industrial-zoned areas of the city by early July. The fifth priority, a new building permit system, has been implemented, which should make it easier to get all those new galleries and theaters built faster. A new app also makes interactions with the city easier. The sixth priority is to continue working to reduce risks of fire from homeless folks camping in the city, particularly in the San Diego riverbed. Best said, since the city hired an outreach person 2 years ago, the number of encampments cleaned was 120, including 16 in the last month. She also noted that a recent count of the homeless population in Santee fell to 46, down from 112 a year ago, though it's unclear whether those people were transitioned into housing or simply moved encampments elsewhere. The seventh priority, looking for ways to improve the trails linked to Mission Trails Park, particularly at Big Rock Park, was put on the back burner, Best said, because most of the land remains in San Diego County, not the city. But the council wants to make safety on its trails a priority, ranking this eighth. Options to make trails safer is the possible adoption of a video camera system, now in the testing phase, that would be monitored by the Sheriff's Department. Number nine is the continued reduction of the city's liabilities involving pensions it must pay to retired workers, which has been accomplished by making higher annual contributions to that budget expense over the last 4 years. The 10th priority has already been achieved, completing a development impact fee and adopting a new set of fees charged to new development that went into effect March 10th. Though not officially listed as a priority, the council also wants to adopt a funding plan for a community center behind the Cameron YMCA. A workshop on this is scheduled for April 9th, but with a cost estimate a few years ago at $50 million and pressures from building new fire stations, that may have to be put on the back burner, even though the project has been favored by several council members over the years. Reporting for East County Magazine from Santee, this is John Tidwell.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
On March 18th, Lemon Grove Mayor Allison Snow issued a proclamation declaring March 30th as the Lemon Grove Incident Day. There will be a celebration March 30th at 1 p.m. in front of the mural that tells the story of a historic desegregation case victory for students in Lemon Grove nearly a century ago. That mural is on the side of a building now at 7963 Broadway in Lemon Grove. March 30th, 2025 marks the 94th anniversary of the first successful school desegregation case in the United States in 1931, when Mexican-American parents challenged the Lemon Grove School District's attempt to segregate their children. The case was called Roberto Alvarez versus the Board of Trustees of the Lemon Grove School District, and is often referred to as the Lemon Grove Incident. This was 23 years before the landmark Brown versus Board of Education case. The celebration of the Lemon Grove Incident will take place in front of the mural. The proclamation will be presented by Pastor Ann Stapleton to Roberto Alvarez, Jr. He's the son of the original plaintiff in the landmark case and was a student at the school at the time. At the event, Alvarez will retell the story, and artist Mario Chacon will talk about the mural he painted back in 2022. The celebration will be hosted by the new tenants moving in soon to the building at 7963 Broadway, Grace Communion Lemon Grove, with Pastors Ann and Mark Stapleton. Grace Communion Lemon Grove believes all people are built for connection and is therefore building out the space to be called the Neighborhood, which will host local events to help neighbors connect with neighbors. Members of the City Council and the Planning Commission will also be present. And Mexican food and drinks will be available for purchase at the Lemon Grove Incident Celebration to help support future community gatherings. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
California Attorney General Rob Bonta has issued a consumer alert to customers of 23andMe, a genetic testing and information company. The California-based firm has publicly reported that it is in financial distress and stated in a securities filing that there is substantial doubt about its ability to continue. Due to the trove of sensitive consumer data that 23andMe has amassed, Attorney General Bonta reminds Californians of their right to direct the deletion of their genetic data under the Genetic Information Privacy Act and the California Consumer Protection Act. Attorney General Bonta says, given 23andMe's reported financial distress, I remind Californians to consider invoking their rights and directing 23andMe to delete their data and destroy any samples of genetic material held by the company. Now, here's how to do that. Log into your 23andMe account on the website. Go to the Settings section in your profile. Scroll to a section labeled 23andMe Data at the bottom of the page and click View. If you want a copy of your genetic data for personal storage, you have an option to download it before proceeding. Then choose the Delete Data option and click Permanently Delete Data. You'll receive an email from 23andMe, which you need to follow via a link in the email to confirm your deletion request. If you previously opted to have your saliva sample and DNA stored by 23andMe, but you want to change that preference, you can do so from your account setting page under Preferences. And if you consented to 23andMe and third-party researchers to use your genetic data and sample for research, you can also withdraw that consent from the account setting page under Research and Product Consents. California consumers can delete their account and genetic data and have their biological sample destroyed. State law also permits California consumers to revoke consent that they provided to a genetic testing company to disclose genetic data and store it after the initial testing is completed. California consumers also have the right to delete personal information, which includes genetic data, from businesses that collect personal info from the consumer. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
As Los Angeles starts to recover from the firestorm, people are looking for ways to harden their homes against future megablazes. Experts say the massive destruction from the Palisades and Eaton fires has some people discouraged, thinking there's nothing they can do to defend their homes. But Michelle Steinberg with the National Fire Protection Association says homeowners can significantly reduce their risk.
Home survival is down to making sure that the exterior of the home cannot carry ignition, and by that we mean non-combustible roofing, siding, good windows that aren't going to crack under heat.
The home ignition zone is the 5-foot area around your structure, so anything within that perimeter, including decks, porches, and fences, needs to be made of non-combustible material. And screens on all vents work to prevent embers from being sucked up into the home. California's statewide building code is considered one of the strongest in the country. It specifies how buildings should be designed and maintained and how they should be sited with appropriate defensible space. Steinberg adds that the state helps people find fire-safe materials.
They actually list products that meet those standards. You can actually find manufacturers and people that provide those products on the California State Fire Marshal's website.
Experts also caution against putting dry wood mulch or climbing vegetation up against the house. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Henry Migala with the Green Scene Report. When Urban Timber Partners Jessica Van Arsdale and Dan Herbst learned that they had just a few months to move their well-established tree salvage business, the couple had to scramble to find a place to move hundreds of tons of logs that they had saved from the landfill. The company that saves trees from urban displacement was itself facing displacement from its Chula Vista location. Fortunately, after a few weeks of stress and uncertainty, Urban Timber found a new location in rural East County. Van Arsdale and Herbst found a 13-acre piece of land listed for sale in Kempo, and they found real estate agent Carol Schneider. She championed the purchase, knowing of Urban Timber's plans for the property were to bring new business and new energy to the town. The vision is to build community in Kempo with resources, materials, and tools on site for artists and woodworkers to design and build projects using salvaged wood from around San Diego County. Schneider, the realtor, says she's amazed at the progress that the couple has made toward turning the property into a showcase. She calls Herbst a true craftsman. In its previous location, Urban Timber transformed a blighted piece of land on Bay Boulevard in Chula Vista into a hub for an artistic and sustainable-minded community where trees came to be upcycled and people came to turn imagination into reality. Through partnerships with the city, word of mouth, and a network of tree lovers, the business amassed a beautiful collection of logs that would have otherwise gone to the wood chipper, but instead were turned into custom furniture, shelving, siding, benches, sculptures, and even a one-of-a-kind Fender guitar named the Timbermaster. Van Arsdale says, "We are so thankful to be here in Kempo. It feels like our future came and got us and took us here to a place we can stay and call home and retire someday." But retirement is way off for the couple who have big plans for their new home. Now that all the wood has been transported from Chula Vista to Kempo, a feat that took 2 weeks, five 38-foot dump trucks, and several 48-foot flatbeds, Herbst says they will put down roots and branch out. Van Arsdale hopes to eventually have demonstrations, tours, info sessions, workshops, and art classes hosting landscape architects, designers, and builders. Soon, she says, we'll create a living catalog of our landscape design materials. We want to put all this material and space to use. The recycled lumber site currently has redwood from Balboa Park, bunya from UCSD, wood from eucalyptus trees that had been cut down due to age or development, and much more. Herbst is also looking forward to the opportunity to use wood from fallen oaks, which he couldn't use while in the city, since oak can't be transported due to the risk of spreading oak borer beetles. He had heard of oak removals around the county, but had not been able to salvage them. Now he can collect fallen oaks and dry them in his kiln to kill the bugs before using the wood. For now, clients can visit Urban Timber by invitation, but eventually the wood catalog will be organized in a more shop-ready format, or possibly showcased locally in partnership with Kempo businesses so customers can see what's available. With kilns and mills on site, logs can be dried, cut, and fashioned for various purposes. Lumber and cut pieces are also still for sale at Urban Timber's separate wood shop location on Industrial Boulevard in Chula Vista, where the business will continue to maintain a presence as it transitions to its new home in Kempo. Van Arsdale is especially excited about forging partnerships with local businesses and organizations. Liberty Rising Healing Sanctuary of Boulevard came to the property to set up the right vibe for moving in, and Rose Acre Farms was also on the welcoming committee. Urban Timber's owners have met their neighbor, who keeps a donkey and rides his horse to visit neighbors, and they've befriended staff at East County Lumber and Feed. Herbst concludes, "We want to do this in a considerate way. We're not coming here with deep pockets and a splashy mansion. We want to stay in rhythm with nature." As Urban Timber gets its footing in Kempo, Van Arsdale and Herbst see the business as an integral part of the town's economy. "But I think we'll need a new name," Van Arsdale muses. "Perhaps not so Urban Timber." This is Henry Migala with a Green Scene Report for East County Magazine and KNSJ Radio.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Local leaders in California are slamming the Trump administration's moves to gut dozens of environmental policies on climate change and pollution in low-income communities. Last week, EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin said the agency will loosen restrictions on oil and gas and reconsider the endangerment finding that underpins regulations on greenhouse gases. City Council Member Felipe Perez from Firebaugh says farm workers in the Central Valley rely on the feds to limit air pollution from nearby oil rigs.
The people that work in the field, we have to go to work even though the pollution is too high. We have to go because we have to feed their families.
The EPA also eliminated the department that fights for environmental justice and killed the Biden-era Justice 40 plan that directed 40% of infrastructure money to low-income communities of color. Daniel Ramos is mayor pro tem of Adelanto in San Bernardino County. He says the Trump administration has frozen millions of dollars earmarked by Congress for improvements to the city's wastewater treatment facility.
Stripping away funding and programs that have already been signed into law, counted on, and in our case, awarded, will definitely have a detrimental impact on those Justice 40 communities.
Igor Tregub is a council member in Berkeley who was born in Ukraine. He says the move to lift rules that promote electric vehicles increases reliance on oil and gas, which he calls a threat to national and international security.
This is a boost to the kinds of fossil fuel industries that fund authoritarian forces like Putin's that have a desire to take over peaceful democracies like Ukraine.
Zeldin defended the moves, insisting they will usher in a golden age of American success and calling former President Joe Biden's environmental policy a Green New Scam. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Fresh water available for human use only makes up about 1% of the water on Earth, and 86% of it goes to irrigated farms. So experts say in a time of water scarcity, agriculture is going to have to cut back. The agricultural industry is the largest user of fresh water, making up nearly 70% of global withdrawals from rivers, lakes, and aquifers. Brian Richter with the nonprofit Sustainable Waters says the majority of water on irrigated farms goes to raise crops used for cattle feed.
So that includes corn silage and sorghum silage, but the dominant crops that are being irrigated in the western United States are alfalfa and grass hay.
Richter adds there's no effective control over the total volume of water that gets used, so rivers are drying up, greatly affecting wildlife. And aquifers are being depleted, causing the ground to sink in some places. Richter predicts that about 20% of existing farmland in the water-stressed western U.S. will need to be retired. So policymakers, water managers, and farmers will have to make hard choices.
You set a cap on the total amount of water that can be consumed from each water source. Another important strategy is shifting from water-intensive crops to crops that don't require as much water. We refer to that as crop shifting.
Another way to ease pressure on global water resources would be to encourage people to eat less beef. This story was produced with original reporting by Gabriella Sotelo for Sentient. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Our East County Magazine radio show needs volunteers, and so does our award-winning news website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you would like to help write scripts, learn reporting skills, research topics for our news team, or have an on-air voice to be the media, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, AK Jewel, Brian Boyko, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.